Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a contradiction that I think sits right at the heart of modern business strategy. It's this fundamental tension between emotional connection and just, you know, relentless operational efficiency.
It's a huge strategic dilemma, really. We've been looking at this fascinating stack of sources that they really dissect how successful communication hinges on emotion.
From what? From movies to sales pitches?
Everything. Blockbuster movies, direct sales pitches, you name it. And then they contrast that very human element with the, well, the unavoidable necessity of automation in business.
So our mission today is to dig into that material and sort of find the balance point. The core tension we're exploring is really critical for you to define. When strategically do you prioritize making someone feel good? And when do you just need to be, well, brutally direct and efficient?
And this choice, it's not just a marketing tactic. I mean, it goes way deeper. You're defining your entire company's personality. Who you want to attract and even who you want to repel all comes down to your interaction style. The style is the strategy.
Okay, let's unpack that. The material kicks off with a great analogy, comparing communication to filmmaking. We all know the difference between a great movie and a bad one, and it's not always the plot. It's the director's ability to create a specific feeling in the audience.
Precisely. And in a business context, whether you're, you know, writing marketing copy or crafting an onboarding experience, the goal is always to create, use, or amplify a feeling.
A feeling. Okay. But that sounds a bit soft. I mean, in the world of contracts and sales, what specific measurable feelings are we talking about here?
Well, the material points to two really powerful pairs of emotions. First, you create a worry.
A worry.
Yeah, a recognition of a problem. It could be, for example, the fear around a cybersecurity vulnerability or maybe a looming regulatory deadline, something that needs attention.
So you're essentially creating a problem the customer didn't even know they had.
In a way, yes. You're highlighting a gap. That worry establishes the need. Then, the second and far more motivating emotion is evoking a powerful sense of relief when they take the action you want.
Ah, that, thank goodness, that sordid feeling.
Exactly. That relief signals the problem is solved. The threat is gone.
That makes perfect sense. The sources also mentioned generating a feeling of anticipation. They reference that BJ Thomas song about being hooked on a feeling.
Yes, that's the carrot. The worry is the stick. The desired future, that excitement is the carrot. That future state of success or pleasure, whatever it is only achieved when the target acts.
And in a digital world, that action is literally pushing the button to pay.
Right. That button becomes the direct pathway to that positive desired future. It's a very powerful psychological tool.
So we've established that feelings drive the desire for action. Now we have to get them to actually move. And that brings us to the action threshold.
The action threshold, it's basically the conceptual barrier to commitment. It's that mental calculation a person makes about the resources they need to commit.
So time, effort, money, trust.
All of it. And that barrier is totally unique to every person, depending on their situation and, you know, their perceived risk.
Logically, then, if you want more people to act, you need to lower that threshold. And the material highlights the freemium model as the classic modern example of this.
It's brilliant, really, in its simplicity. The action required is minimal, just an email sign up, maybe. And crucially, the cost out of pocket is zero. So the target perceives they're getting real value for something for nothing.
But they're not really paying nothing, are they? They're paying with their time and effort, which is now being spent on your platform instead of a competitor's. What's the deeper psychology there?
The goal is to trigger the principle of reciprocity, a sense of obligation. Social psychology tells us that when someone gives you something of value, even if it's free, you feel a little compelled to give something back.
You're building up a kind of psychological debt.
It's a psychological investment. You're building equity not in dollars, but in the user's feeling of obligation, and that primes them for a future conversion.
Okay, that's the theory.
Right.
But in practice, the material points out a really interesting negative side of this. Some people hate this model.
Oh, they intensely resent it. They see the free offer as a cynical trap or, you know, a sign of unethical behavior, and they react very aggressively.
And that reaction, surprisingly, is actually a key part of the strategy. The sources argue it's a filtration mechanism.
It is. It seems counterintuitive, like bad customer service, but it's not.
A filter? Why would you want to filter out any user?
Well, not if your ultimate goal is to build long-term, friendly, high-value relationships. People who feel scammed by a free trial are often people whose core values just don't align with the kind of relationship you're trying to build.
So if they react with that much resentment to a $0 exchange, they're signaling they'd be a terrible partner in a $10,000 exchange down the line.
Precisely. They define who the company doesn't want. They exit the process early, which saves both sides a huge amount of wasted time and friction.
That leads us perfectly into the biggest contradiction in the sources, this idea of the required business personality. The material describes a successful model that is constantly managing two, well, completely conflicting desires.
It's the dual nature of it all. On one hand, this personality wants and seeks out enjoyment and real-time interaction.
Okay.
They see excessive standardized stuff like those automated holiday greetings or birthday emails as artificial politeness,
Disingenuous.
utterly disingenuous. The material even points out that this type of strategic mind will actually take the time to handwrite individual birthday emails, maybe even include a poem.
A poem. Why?
Because the act of personalization is the ultimate sign of respect. It shows the relationship is valuable enough to deserve actual human time. But here's the paradox.
Okay.
The very same person is an absolute fanatic for efficiency in other contexts. They will not tolerate wasted time on simple, repeatable tasks.
They dislike those long, rambling conversations where the important point is buried somewhere in the sixth paragraph.
Exactly. They insist on don't bury the lead. The critical information has to be the opening statement.
But wait, doesn't that sound a bit cold? If they value personalization so highly, how do they justify that almost impersonal speed?
The material argues it isn't coldness, it's respect. Respect for the other person's time. It's about separating the relational sphere from the informational sphere. When we're building trust, let's connect personally. When we're just executing a task, let's be surgical.
And how extreme does this surgical efficiency get?
Well, the sources detail the use of keyboard shortcuts. Things like CTRL, F1, F2, used maybe 3 to 10 times a day for quick, redundant communications.
What kind of messages are we talking about?
Purely functional stuff. One example is, invitation sent under separate cover, please confirm receipt, FC. Another one, even shorter, is just call starting now.
Let's pause on that first one. FC. What does that stand for?
In this context, FC is just for confirmation. It's a quick professional closing that saves a few keystrokes, but more importantly, ensures that confirmation loop gets closed. It moves the task forward.
Okay, I get it. But why use a shortcut for something as short as call starting now? That can't take much time to type.
It's the cumulative effect. First, it saves time across hundreds of interactions. Second, you ensure absolute reliability, no typos, no variations. And critically, the material highlights that this also helps prevent repetitive stress injuries.
Ah, I see. It's not just a time saver, it's part of a systemic approach to long-term health and efficiency.
Exactly. The ultimate goal isn't to be just tolerated by your partners. The goal is to build a relationship where you genuinely like each other. Being predictable and quick on the functional stuff frees up the mental energy for those high-touch moments that really build the connection.
So this dual-style hyper-personal and hyper-efficient acts as another strategic filter.
It does. It filters for people who value both sides of that coin. Those who enjoy a real connection but also demand clear, direct operational exchanges. If someone can't tolerate that mix, they'll exit the process early.
And this all brings us to the question of scale, right? This high-touch, high-efficiency model, it really depends on the size of the operation.
Completely. This dual personalized filtering approach, it works best for smaller, high-value operations, places where each individual relationship is a critical asset.
But once you're a massive global company, the model just breaks. You can't sustain that.
No way. The sources contrast this with a company like Google. For an organization at that scale, a personal handwritten relationship with a single customer is, frankly, irrelevant to the bottom line.
So if not personal connection, what feelings does a company that big want to create?
The goal shifts entirely. The material suggests it becomes about creating feelings of cold, objective efficiency, low cost of entry, overwhelming scalability. The goal is to be a utility, not a friend.
And their name and their whole image really reinforces that clean, functional.
Exactly. And that strategic goal perfectly explains the role of AI in the mass market today.
How so?
AI is marketed primarily as the ultimate tool for efficient access to content. It's about speed and scale above all else. Any personalization is usually secondary, a thin veneer on a purely computational function. It reinforces that core identity of efficient utility.
So, For you listening, if you're building a business, what's the fundamental takeaway from all this?
The conclusion is that you have to strategically define the specific feelings you want to generate, and you have to be honest about it. That emotional goal is a core component of success. If you try to create a feeling of authentic connection but then rely on full automation to deliver it, well, that artificiality becomes obvious really fast.
That's the crash the sources refer to, isn't it? Trying to scale a genuine feeling just leads to an inevitable collapse of authenticity.
It is. The automation becomes visible, and the feeling you end up generating isn't connection, it's disappointment. Or worse, you just seem disingenuous.
It's a brilliant synthesis, really. It brings us back to that necessary balance defined in the material. The idea that I want you to feel good when we talk, but to be direct and efficient when we exchange information. And there's a difference.
Success requires mastering that switch, moving seamlessly between high-touch, emotionally intelligent interaction and high-speed, no-frills efficiency, and both have to reflect who you really are.
Which raises a really interesting and maybe a provocative question for you, the listener, to consider. Given this framework, think about the automated communications you receive today. You know, generic holiday messages, appointment reminders, all that stuff. Which of them cross the line for you personally? Which ones go from being efficient to feeling genuinely thoughtless or disingenuous? And what signal does that send about the sender's real personality?
That's a powerful thought to chew on as you design your own strategy.
It really is. Thank you for guiding us through the strategy of feeling versus the necessity of efficiency.
Always a pleasure. It's always great to explore the strategy beneath the surface.
And for those of you who want to dig even deeper, the sources do mention that there are free advisory calls held monthly. It's a place where you can share your situation and learn from others applying these same ideas. So you can look for more info on those calls if you want to explore this more personally. That's all the time we have for this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.